Teclado.
ماشي.
Okay.
¿Tiene sonido o algo, no?
No, no tiene sonido. Mi voz.
Jolín, ¿por qué se va? Vale.
Claro. Ah, sí, está.
Vale. Ahora sí.
Perfecto. Ok. We start now since I mean I have to finish basically sharp at or 10 past 11. For another meeting, if you want to come, is a meeting on multiculturality at IFIC. So all of you are invited if you want. And there will be some paella there in the cafeteria after. Okay, so I hope that people on Zoom listen properly. If you have some problem, you turn on the microphone and say that you are not seeing, listening, or whatever. Or, well, I don't know, you will try to seek a way to communicate with us. I've put on the Indigo web page of the course both the slides of last class, actually, the proper slides that I should have shown, the one that was were slightly modified, and both the recording that is very lengthy, very boring, but it is what it is, okay? So my idea is that I will put also these, so if you can go back if you want and see. Fine. This second class form a whole with the first one. The two classes are intended to show you how to write the thesis from scratch to the complete one. In the first class, we have devised how you organize the material, how you should start writing, in which order, if you, I mean, this is my suggestion, of course. All that I say is a suggestion. This is a course that is not intended to be the way you do something, because it's not physics, it's metaphysics, it's on how I do these things. And you could take tips or whatever, but then you can have your own way to do things. In my opinion, you organize the material and you start writing what was already done in the literature in order to have a building block. Then use it to compare with your stuff, and then eventually you write the introduction. Okay, then. Since this is a thesis in physics, that is basically the most iconic hard science that you have. All other hard sciences was built with the idea that they have to resemble physics. It has several tools that are that we have to use compulsory. I mean, equations are not an option. You could put no equation on your paper, but this is very strange. But usually, one equation is there also if it's an experimental thesis. Figures are not an option. Also, if you have a very theoretical thesis, a figure is not bad point. You can have different kind of figures that are probably designed in order to convey qualitative messages or quantitative messages, depending on the thesis. Another thing that is not an option but is compulsory is a good bibliography. I will try to tell you what good bibliography means. There are some recipes. Tables are another point that has to be done in a given way. So today is devoted to this kind of technicalities that usually are one of the points that are worse in the thesis. The text can be awful, but nobody read the text, no? We already discussed in the very first day that I'm the reader, I have an option to skip things if I want, if I'm in a hurry, if I have no time, so I can skip the text. But if there is a picture, I will try to have a look at the picture. So where the bad things come out usually is in the picture or in the questions. We will see. So today is devoted to technicalities. Okay? This is this part. And we will also discuss bibliography. In each kind of area of research, you have different techniques to quote things. For example, if you go to a thesis in literature, the bibliography will be quite different from us. Usually, there is not a collection of papers, but a collection of books. So each entry is lengthy. And actually, in a thesis in literature, the bibliography itself could be half of the thesis. The entries in themselves are commented and like that. In our case, bibliography is not like that. I will show you how is a bibliography for us. Okay? So let's start with the most important part of the talk of today, that is the graphics, so graphical objects. Okay? Here you have some kind of graphical objects. You can produce the graphical object with your own software, for example, Mathematica or Python or whatever. And you can produce them in whichever format. So some time ago, you were obliged to produce them in PostScript. But now you can produce in any language, in any format, and usually the LaTeX editor will import them. So it's not a problem to have them in JPG or PNG or PDF. I used to produce them in PDF with Mathematica because I'm working mostly with Mathematica, but I can include format like a JPG with no problem. Okay, so this is up to you. Depending on the particular software you use, it will be easier or not to do things like this with a lot of text or things like that with mostly lines or like this in which now you have software dedicated to produce this. This kind of figure some years ago would have been a mess. It would have been very difficult to draw line by line, but now you can just put the, well, actually probably ChatGPT now produce the figure by itself and there's no problem. I will explain how you do with LaTeX, but if you are using a different kind of software to compile, well, you will find what you have to do. Now, I'm not, of course, showing you how you produce the figure, but which is the content that should go into the figure. Okay. There are two kinds of figures. As I told you, both in a theoretical thesis and in an experimental thesis, you can have plenty of figures. In the theoretical thesis, most of them will be of this kind, qualitative. Qualitative means that there are no quantitative information that is relevant. There, for example, here I want to draw a Feynman diagram. Each of the details in the figure are arbitrary. The lines could have been longer or shorter. This particular loop could have been whatever. So this is aesthetic, okay? The information is not the numerics of the figure, but is the figure itself. So it's, let's say, is semantic. The figure is relevant for what it represents, not for the numerics behind. What happens with this kind of figure? Well, usually they are very clean and they are very simple. Actually, the simpler, the better. If you have a qualitative figures with a lot of features, then it lose its characteristic of being immediately representative of the thing that you want to show. For example, this is very typical for a theoretical picture. I have no example, but there are. Imagine you have done a lengthy two-loop computation in the standard model of something. Fine. And it ends up that you have been working on 10,000 diagrams. Because when you are at loop and you are in the standard model, you can have loops of whatever. So the numerics of the number of diagrams you do is gigantic. You cannot put 5 pages of figures of all the Feynman diagrams that you have done, because in that the message that is there are many diagrams is already conveyed with a line in which you have two or three classes of diagram, maybe with a number saying this class of diagram is 150, this class of diagram is 200, and whatever. Okay, so the qualitative pictures has to be the simplest as possible. Few lines, few words, a simple legend, whatever. There are the other kind of figures in which what is relevant instead are the numbers on it. Okay, in this case, what is relevant is not the colors, but is that this point is precisely 300. And this ends around 800 to 900 GV, and the scale are relevant. Okay, in this case, is the opposite. Now the message are the numbers on it, not the general picture. Actually, I have no idea of what this particular figure represent. Of course, you will have to explain in the text, in the caption, or whatever, and say this figure represent this. But the message is that of these particular things, I can test this kind of ritual, for example. This is the experiment. You see that in this case, legends are very, very important, because the most information you put on the picture itself, the less you have to put in the caption, the less you ask to the reader to go to the text in order to understand the figure. So the figure becomes self-explainable. Self-explanatory. Okay? This kind of figure usually tend to be messier precisely because you put many lines on it. Actually, I will show you after, you have to put many lines on it, otherwise the figure is empty. The problem is that sometimes they get overfilled with things. So you have to stay in the middle. Information, but without too much information. So now we'll go and see an example. This is, well, I don't know, is written here. The histogram showing all the cuts being applied to transfer missing energy. Okay, this is not explaining what this object is. No, I read the caption and I cannot know which kind of signal. And I know that the events of this kind of signal are these guys. And of course, you have some backgrounds. BG stands for background. Now, the information here is that the signal that is blue is overwhelmed by the background that is red. And so you have to find the regions of the parameter space in which the signal is better. For example, if you put a cut here and you exclude the region where there is no signal, you are only in the region that is relevant for you. So that's why this particular histogram is showing the cuts. The information here is that there is a gray region that is excluded by your computation. You see that the figure and the caption has to go together. The caption explains something of the figure. That's why I'm saying that the figure actually is made of two parts. The graphic object itself, that as I told you would be PDF, JPG, whatever, and the caption. Now, the caption is not an option. This is something that we often find in the thesis. People put figures with no captions. Okay, this is the typical error of the advisor. The advisor should say, "This has no caption, put the caption." Okay? I'm here to remind that in general, you have to put a caption. This is really not an option. I remind you, I'm in the jury and I'm not reading the thesis, so I will have no idea what the figure is. Magic, that could happen. I just opened the thesis 5 minutes before your turn. And I go to see the figure, and I want to go to the figure, and I don't want to the text that explain the figure. So the caption below explain to me what I want to read. So this is helpful for the reader. The caption has to be there. Now, you see that there is also a legend. As I told you, the most you put in the legend, the less you have to put in the caption. Okay? So in this case, you have already explained the colors. And so in the caption, you have not the, to explain what are the colors. And for a reader that is an expert, you already know that this is WW and this is ZZ. I myself understand a lot of things of which kind of events are there by just looking at the figure, because there is the legend, because more or less I understand that this would be something like X to WW, X to ZZ, or I don't know, whatever. It has to be something that produced to W or to Z, or maybe, yeah, probably this is X to something, and then the background could be photon to or glue on to W, so to Z or whatever. Not glue on. Okay, so the legend itself is extremely useful. Fine. Here there is also another piece in which they are stating which is this particular value. This is another thing that you can avoid to put in the caption because it's already in the figure. Okay? In the caption, you say that the gray region is excluded, and in the figure, you have put the precise point in which you are excluding it. Of course, this figure belongs to the quantitative group. Che passa? No, problem. Okay? The legend cannot be too crowded. If the legend becomes very crowded, then it becomes difficult to read. We will see after an example which is too crowded. This, for me, is very important. The figures themselves should be possible to be read in black and white. Now, I mean, I'm from a different era in which you were downloading the file and printing it. I still find more manageable to read the paper in paper and to take note in on the paper. Of course, you are from a different generation, probably you never print. Still, you can imagine that if you produce something, someone in the world could need to print it. And if you need to print, maybe you print in black and white because you don't want to waste the color printer for a paper one out of 100 that you print every year. Let's see. No? Okay. So at least take the time to see what happens if your figure is in gray scale. Okay? So put colors that are sharply different and that they become grays. Then you can still read them. Although, if the colors in the figure are different and so will be easy to distinguish, most of the time in the caption you will not distinguish them because the caption is a small maybe. Here there is a box. So, probably different grays here. I have not the version in gray, but different grays here can be detected and they are the same of the idea. But sometimes people in the legend put just a line. Now, lines in different tonality of grays are impossible to distinguish. That's why if you have lines, I will always use dashed, dot, dashed, solid. So a part of the color, you can put, of course, the lines with different colors, but use also something like dashing or dotting, because then in the legend, if you just put the line, it's distinguishable. Okay? Now, so I strongly suggest that you try to do a check of how it comes out in grays. Then we have to go to the caption. As I told you, it's not an option, but still you have an option, which is the option. This is a caption in which they are not saying what the figure is. Okay? Probably because in the text they say figure 5-6 is what it is. In the caption, they give other information. Okay? For example, here probably is important to say here we have scaled the number of events in accordance with equation 5329. Okay, so this is another piece of information that they are giving to the reader that is looking at the picture. It has to go to the text, look for the equation, understand what does it mean this, and probably nearby there will be also the figure 5-6. This is an option. That is not this one. This is the option. Okay, you just say basically go to the text and read it. It's a possible option in which the caption is there and it tells you to go to the text to say something and gives you some information. The other option is that the caption contains all of the information that you need to read the figure. Okay? I prefer this first one, precisely because most of the time you just go to the figures and to see the figures. Or actually, you could start from the figure in order to understand what the paper is on. But of course, both possibilities are okay. What is not possible is not to put a caption. This is an example of a caption that explains everything. Of course, it's from a paper of myself, in which I say the scale, this is basically the title of the figure, the scale needed to achieve Friis-Autre relic abundance, N5FO, I define what it is, as a function of the dark matter mass, I define this variable, for this particular value. Then I say solid orange, dot dash blue, and dotted red lines correspond to scalar, fermion, vector, dark matter, respectively. Okay, so I've explained what it is. The green shaded area, on the other hand, is the experimental bound from xenon 1t. Okay, so in this kind of caption, you have explained everything. If the reader read this, knows what it is. But I'm not saying that it is better. I prefer to do that, but the problem is that then the paper becomes lengthier. If you have some figures and if a figure has a lot of things written, half of the paper becomes the caption of the paper, of the figures. Imagine that you are writing a for physical review letter in which you have an upper bound of 4 pages for everything. In that case, the caption cannot be lengthy. You have to think of something that is illustrative of the figure but is concise. Okay, so you have to decide depending on the format you have. If you are writing in a thesis, you can have lengthy caption, of course. Okay, in this link there were tips to draw figures. I think that still works. Since I'm uploading the slides, you will find the link there. And remind, what is most important here is the message and the fact that the figure can be read. Okay? The fact that the figure is nice is not mandatory. You can use it as a trick to get the attention of the reader. The reader has the thesis, and maybe there is a very nice picture in colors, and the reader stops and see, oh, what it is. For example, imagine a figure of fractals. They are usually very nice. You stop and then you read the caption and maybe you understand and then maybe you go to the text. So beauty of the figure itself would be a trick in order to draw the attention. But what is really important is the message. For example, this is a figure that is on purpose done like if it's sketched by hand. And what it's telling you is that the robot, the most it resembles a human being, the most uncomfortable makes you. So this is the region in which you are very uncomfortable for the robot. When it's exactly identical to you are very comfortable. You will not distinguish the robot from yourself, so you are. Okay, if it's not very similar to a human, then you are Well, you're not very happy. You see this stuff, and okay. Which is the message? This is, of course, a qualitative figure, and the message is that depending on the particular external behavior of a robot, psychologists have studied that you react in different ways. So this is the message. The fact that the figure looks like handwritten is not a problem, because the point is the message that you want to give. Of course, you have no qualitative quantitative statement to do, because you cannot say 95% of the people react positively against a robot that is identical to a human being, because probably you have just three tests, and that is typical in psychology, and that's it. So your statistics is poor, and you don't want to give the message of the statistics, but you infer the information that probably will be it's okay. Now I'm showing you in sequence bad figures. Okay, these are all of them examples of what I understand to be a very bad figure. These are taken from everywhere. This one was during the pandemics in Times or Newsweek, a general magazine of this kind. This second one was from a thesis of many years ago. The third one was another thesis of some years ago. Okay, so let's discuss. This first picture has no scale at all. So we could classify into the qualitative picture. Okay, I can survive with a picture in which there are no scales, although I'm plotting a mathematical-like line. So the message I want to give is that there is some scientific information behind. But this is a general newspaper like Newsweek. So I don't want the reader to be to disturbed by numbers, so I remove the numbers at all. You have basically no number. Actually, if you go, this is too small to read, but this is the time in which during the pandemics you reach a peak in the number of contagions in a particular country. So they are comparing UK, France, Italy, and Spain. And actually, you have here some information on the month, but it was completed. This is May. First thing, the horizontal scale doesn't coincide. So they are not in the same scale. Each of them is entered in a way in which the peak is in the middle of the figure. Then the reader has to do the work of translating the figure in order to be in the same point. Because if the message is when the peak of the contagions arrived in a given country, you have to compare the countries. And you are leaving the reader to do the work of putting the lines one on top of the other. And the second thing is that since you have no vertical axis, actually you have no idea what I am comparing, 100,000 cases or 100 cases. So you cannot superimpose one of them on the other, because maybe England is like this or is like that. So there is absolutely no message. Really, this kind of figure has no message. It want to be a qualitative figure, so I'm not boring you with details, but in reality, I'm giving you no message. In this other figure, I'm giving a message, that is that this line is a straight line that goes like this. Actually, goes from 0 to 1, 0 to 1. So this is precisely the diagonal. Do I need a figure to tell you that something goes in a straight line from 0 to 1 when some other thing goes from 0 to 1? This is y equal to x. I don't need a figure to say this. Okay, so there is absolutely no need for a figure that at the disassembly. So you look at the figure with a diagonal line. I will not put a figure like this. In this case, there is too few information. In this kind, this is a, they are selling you that they are giving you information, but actually there is no way to compare the information, and the information is in the comparison, not in the fact that you have 4 peaks. Here in chain, there is no need for certificate. In this case, it's the opposite. I'm trying to put in a figure everything. Okay, this one from a thesis on triggers in electronics, I don't remember which device, was for something LHC-like. But it's clear from the figure that you have too many things together. If the reader want to read the figure, spend half an hour just to read the figure. And you can imagine the caption. How can you say in the caption that you have, I mean, clear, no? So these are three examples in which it's manifest that the figure is wrong. This is from last year. Well, last year I gave the same course, so there were people attending. And I had the fortune, the luck, I was lucky enough to be in the jury with the two guys that both attended the course. One wrote a reasonable thesis. The other one wrote a text that was okay, but the figure, I'm sorry, I'm using them as an example. So there is a figure like this, figure 7. You can imagine immediately that falls into the category of this kind of figure. Okay? So a line of resonance at some point, fine. However, in the next page, there is a second figure. Another line of a resonance of another. Unfortunately, in the next page, there is a third figure, another line of another resonance in another point. And unfortunately, in another place, there is a fourth figure. So I have 4 pages in which half of the page is filled by this. And the guy was attending the course. I've already explained precisely these kind of problems. So actually in the course I started saying, I see that you attended my course, but I'm sorry that you didn't take notice of what I was saying. So imagine that you put these four figures that were occupying 4 pages of the 50 that you have. You have not many pages and you are losing them in this way in one. So this I've done by superimposing these figures with opacity, putting the same scale, because actually you see here also that the scale are not the same. Each of them has the line beautifully put in the middle, to the price of changing both the sides of the horizontal axis and the position of the starting point. Okay? So no one of these figures has the same horizontal scale. Fine? For example, maybe these two, yes. This is 8,000. No, but yeah, maybe these two have the same size, but these two certainly not, and these two have not the same size as the rest. If you put all of them together, this is what comes out. Now, they are more or less all with the same scale. And so you can give the message that depending on the particular resonance that you are studying, they are slightly shifted in the horizontal axis, and you can explain. Okay, so in this case, don't do four figures with zero information in them. Put one and focus the attention of the reader in the differences between the lines. So all the cases in which you have something like this, I will put many lines depending on another parameter. I'm sure that your things will depend on another, I don't know. Y is equal to X at temperature 20 degrees, but is equal to 2X at temperature 23 and is equal to 4X. So then is the same stupid information by itself, a straight line, but at least you have three of them with a different tangent. Okay, so you fill the space and also you give some information. So use the information because the picture is extremely helpful in doing this. Okay, so this was an example that I was a bit sad because I mean, I spent a lot of time explaining precisely this. So at least you try to take notice that don't do NTP figures. This is the problem with the equation. So, when I go to figures, the problem is either I put too much information or I put too few information. Or I don't give a message like in the newspaper, in the Newsweek figure. In the case of equation, you can turn into different problems. So, before starting the equation, do you have some question on figures?
You mentioned about the possibility of checking about the contrast in black and white,
Yes.
but there is also this trend of doing color palettes that are visible for color blind.
Like grids or
Yeah.
pattern. This is very, very nice. Yes, you're right. If you go to a figure like this one, in this case, of course, pattern could be a very good idea. Because if they are very dense and you put a lot of gray, also the figure itself is a bit heavy. It's all grays and you have slight tonalities of grays. For example, I don't know if I have an ex I don't remember if I have an example here or in the one on on the discussion. Imagine that you put an increment in the discussion, for example, you put an incremental figure in which you have the figure and you add things. Okay, like it's an animation, but really what you have done preparing three figures and you all superimposed. So imagine that the first figure has just the signal, is a nice blue. And then I have to superimpose backgrounds. For example, instead of using colors, I could use regions that are with a grid mesh and things. If the figure becomes too heavy, then it's better because behind you see just the color of the signal, but then parts are meshed and you understand that they are excluded by some things. So this is a good option in the case in which, for example, incremental figures. And I agree that this is instead of grayscale, is a good idea. Okay, in the legend, there should be, of course, the pattern of the mesh. Okay.
Can I ask something?
Of course.
Sometimes I have problems with the robots, they overlap.
Yes.
Any recommendation?
You say in horizontal, you have the vertical error bars and they overlap with the.
With the other, I have two lines or two parallel
Okay, and overlap the okay. In this case, I would put no rectangles, I would put a cross, and then I will move the slightly the points in order that they do not coincide vertically. And I will say in the text that in order to make the error bar to overlap, we move the infinitesimally the this is very typical because you're right. So you have this, and maybe you write the second one like this, and you say in the text that actually they should be at the same vertical horizontal position, but you moved in order to make this to be seen. Usually, when you have many error bar, it's better to put just the line instead of. Because then the figure becomes very heavy. If you have many points, don't put rectangles. If you have few points, it could be an option because the rectangle is the area in which one sigma more or less is okay. Okay? So let's move to equations. Okay. You should only write the equations that are needed to do something. If you have other equations that you want to put because you want to show up, you put them in the appendix. You are very clean of your work, you have solved something and you want that everybody knows, put in the appendix. In the text, you just put the equation that you have solved and the solution. Not all the intermediate passage. I was very clever because I found this trick in order to solve it. Appendix. Okay? Then, well, it's already written like this. This is my suggestion. If you have in the text passages between equations, then it becomes very sloppy and very tiring for the reader, because the reader maybe has no time of putting a piece of paper to go through the passages and check that he understand the logic. You just give the result and say, if you want to see how did I get there, you go to the appendix. Okay? Now, this is interesting because this I found in a paper. Well, it was published in a physics paper, but it's studying the number of citations as a function of the number of equations in the paper. So they studied a lot of papers in biology and a lot of paper in physics. What happens? This is the number of citations that the paper received, and this is the number of equations that appear in the paper. So here you see, in a biology paper, there are very few equations, okay? Because at most you have a paper with eight equations, but still the number of citations clearly drop if you go beyond two. So if you are a biologist and you put more than two equations in your paper, forget that anybody will read it. They will see, oh, too many equations, there are three. Okay? This is the message if we are in biology. Now, in physics, we cannot infer the same. As you see, yeah, this is the number of equations per page. I'm sorry. Not in the whole paper. But you see that basically there is no correlation between the number of equations. Why? Because paper with a lot of equations will be read by theorists that like them. Paper with few equations will be read by experimentalists that like them. Everybody's a public, and that's okay. Whereas for biologists, this is not the language they use. So if you put an equation, the mean biologist don't like it. Okay, so there is clearly a correlation between the two things. This means again that you really put only the equation that you need. Well, if you're a physicist, we have seen that there is not a strong correlation, but still I feel that you have to put the fewest, the better. When you put an equation in the thesis, you have to explain absolutely everything. There is no room for putting an equation saying that the reader already know what it is. For example, you put a stupid equation in which I'm defining things, still I write where epsilon alpha is an infinitesimal anticommutating two-component wild fairness. Okay? Delta, you have not to explain, is the variation. This you have to understand that everybody knows, but the rest, psi is the field, but epsilon has to be explained. So when you get to an equation with many different symbols that are not derivatives or integrals or things that you assume that the reader has to know, the rest has to be explained. Do you remember in the other day that in the Parisi paper, the function that was the bulk of the stuff was not even defined, so nobody would know f, q, p, whatever was. Whereas in the Altarelli Parisi paper, everything was explained. Okay, so this is the trick. If you put an equation, you define everything. It's not needed that you explain how you arrive to an equation. This is a Boltzmann equation for the evolution of the number of the density of dark matter as a function of temperature in an expanding universe. Okay, you don't care. If you are writing a thesis in which this is the starting point of your work, you just write this and put the reference where this equation was derived. This is supposed to go in the old stuff, the one that everybody knows. Still, you should say, well, H is the Hubble parameter at temperature T, N is the density of dark matter, sigma V is the average cross-section over the velocity, NVm Eq is the density of dark matter at equilibrium. So in the text, you explain everything, but you have not to derive the equation. Okay. If you read it, too many questions. Okay. Never ever write equations in the introduction or the conclusion if you are not Einstein. Since he's dead, no problem. Never ever write an equation in the introduction or in the conclusion. Fine? That's it. Now, the equation itself is a piece of language. Okay, this I stress a lot, but I mean, probably is a. Well, I don't know why I stress it a lot, but I consider that the equation is a piece of language. If you are reading it, you read the equation. So you arrive in some point in which you read ml squared, it's identical to m50 squared, that is equal to 8/9. Okay? Since it's a piece of language, you have to punctuate it like a piece of language. Since this is a list, you will put the comma after the list, after each piece of the list, and you put the full stop at the end of the list. Okay, so you have to treat each equation as a piece of your discussion because you have to imagine that if I'm reading it, I will take a pause in some point and so on and so forth. Okay, so this makes the reading much neater. Better than to insert the figure like an external object in your file. This is a part of the discussion. Actually, remember that when you put an equation into the text, you will always introduce like a sentence. It can be shown that, then you have the equation, where this is that, okay, so you see that really is a part of the discussion. It's just that it's written with the characters that are not those that you use in the standard language. But for us, they are part of the characters that we use. So it's a piece of the discussion. Okay, so every time you use equations, you put commas, points, wherever they have to be, okay, like if they are in the discussion. Now we go to references. So we are going. Okay, it's okay. We are going fast. Ah.
I have a question with the equation. How do we have to label them? Like, if it's the 10th equation, it's just the number 10 of, or
Well,
if it's like the second equation in the section 3, like
I'm
right 3.2.
well, first of all, you have chosen an editor that usually incorporates the fact that we put a number to the question. In Word, I don't know how to activate it, but I'm sure that it is. But I assume that you use LaTeX. So automatically, if you put an equation, there will be a number. First of all, I would put a number only to those equations that you have to refer to in some other part of the text. Say equation 1, 2, 3, 4. And out of the equation 1, 2, 3, 4, some lines below, you need equation 3, in which you say, in equation 3, we have seen that if equation 3 is the only one that you need in the discussion, then put the number only to equation 3. It means that the other are ancillary questions. They are not really needed for the discussion. For example, if you have an equation and the solution to the equation, maybe you will refer to the solution of the equation. In this case, probably you refer also to the equation. Equation 1 was solved and the solution was equation 3. In meanwhile, there is a passage. The passage skip the numbering. Well, then the numbers of the equation in LaTeX will be usually related to the chapter in which they are automatically. So you will have equation 1.1 if it's in chapter 1, 2.1 if it's in chapter 2, 8.1 if it's in the appendix A. The appendix is better to numbering with the letter A, B, C, D. The sections or chapters will be 1, 2, 3, 4. Don't do too much indenting. If you have a chapter in the thesis, you will have chapters. Maybe a chapter can have some sections. Try to avoid to have subsections. And in any case, avoid absolutely to have subsection because then the equation will become 2.4, 0.3, 0.1, every equation is four numbers. I think there was here an example of this. Well, in this case was equation 5329. This was because it's in a subsection of a chapter, or is in a sub-subsection of a section. Okay? Well, too many things. Fine. The equation are nice when they are 5.3. Nice, I'm saying the numbering is better if they are 5.3 and not 5.3.29. This is for the organization of the chapters. In order to avoid having the number, you should put no number. Okay, so all the questions that are not needed in the text anymore, but you want to put them because they are needed for this particular part, then you don't put the number. In equations in which you have this, okay, so you have a list, I usually put just one number. And in the text, I would say the second of 1.1, that is this one. I'll not put two numbers in a list because otherwise you lose the meaning of having a list. And if they are a list, they are intended to be one single object. The single object here are the masses of the model R. Okay, the object is masses of the model. And I have two particles, the radion and the Gauss-Klein particle. Okay? I do two equations in which I say the mass of the radion is, whereas the mass of the Gauss-Klein is, and I have two separated equations. If I do a list, I put just one number. Fine? And then I say, as it can be seen, the mass of the Gauss-Klein, that is the comma, the second equation in 1.1. Fine. So let's move to bibliography. I forgot every year I forget to prepare a section on tables. Still, I would ask you to prepare one table as an exercise for Wednesday, because tables are very useful for experimentalists in particular. But everything I forget again. So now I'm telling me next year I will execute a section devoted to tables. I will forget. If you have a question on tables, we will discuss on Wednesday. So let's go to the bibliography. As I told you, depending on the field, the bibliography could even be the most important part of the thesis. In literature, I'm pretty sure that the bibliography is the building block of a thesis. If you are writing about an obscure writer of the 16th century, it's much more relevant to quote the literature that you have found on this particularly obscure writer and on his works than the text itself, because probably you will have not much more information that was already been written. And in any case, whatever you write on the obscure writer of the 16th century has to be founded on the bibliography that you found about him. Fine? Or her. In our case, the bibliography is an important part of the thesis, but it's not the bulk of the thesis. Okay? It's two, three pages. I would say that in the master thesis, in which you have an upper bound to 50, I would devote to the bibliography no more than 4 pages at most, but no less than two. Now, this seems stupid. I'm telling you two to four. And you say, but I have much more, I've read much more papers, or I have very few papers to quote. Still, the general impression that you have in a thesis of 50 pages with half a page of bibliography is awful. And of a 50 page of thesis, 10 pages of bibliography is also awful. Okay, these are the kind of things that are precisely to be explained in a course like this. The meta of the thesis, the external appearance of the thesis itself give a message that is what you want to convey. You have not to be drawn to give a message that is not perfectly understood from you. You have to control the message. In Spanish, they say controlar el relato. Okay, so you are the one that decide how many things go into the bibliography, and I tell you that between 2 to 4 pages. Now, every time that there is an original paper in which something was put, you have to say, better to quote more than less, still within a margin. And of course, there is a joke about the optimal number of citations that you have. A few should be a reasonable number. Actually, it's better quite a few. Fine. When you are at the very beginning, usually you have the tendency to consider two or three papers. These are the papers that are relevant to me, and that's it. And you tend to forget that many other people have done something similar. So I would suggest, although if you have read just three papers, because your advisor gave you three papers to read at the very beginning, to look for related bibliography and to expand a bit. Fine. That's why I say quite a few. Really, for you, three papers were the relevant one. But there are other people that have been working on the same. Or you can compare your result to other people, or you were not aware only when you were when you were looking at the background, you discovered that someone else has done something very similar. This is typical. I publish a paper, and the same day come out a paper of some other guys of some other place that say, we have already done this 2 days ago, and you are not aware of it because okay, this is typical because you are not following everybody in the world. And for you even less, because you focused on your particular subject in your thesis. This is an example. Imagine that you have done a thesis on supersymmetry. And in order to understand what supersymmetry is, your advisor gave you this particular review. Written in 97, updated in 16. I don't know if there is a new update. Very good. It's a very good explanation of what supersymmetry is, and maybe it's the good thing to go instead of the original papers. Why? This is typical. If you have someone that invents something, it's not a standard rule that is also this guy's writes the things in the best possible way because they've just been invented. Okay? So it takes time and it takes someone else to understand and to rephrase things in a better way. So most of the time, the best option in order to start in a field is not the original paper, but something written 20 years after. So there are better things on the standard model written by Weinberg in the 90s than the original paper by Weinberg himself. The same happens with general relativity. If you read the paper by Einstein in 1915, is way worse than worse, way more difficult to understand than generated a book written by Einstein that was called General Relativity for pedestrians or whatever in the 40s. Okay? So your advisor gave this paper to be understood in order to start your thesis. Fine. Of course, you will cite this. However, this is the citation for your paper. Okay, so this is published here, whatever, blah, 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 and all the information on the publication is here, and you will have to import. However, all of this work was introduced 30 years before in these papers. So this is of 1997, and the original paper were here. I'm not saying that you have to read those papers, but you have to be aware that those papers existed. Although if your advisor suggested you to read the review, in the bibliography you have to quote the original one. Okay, supersymmetry that was introduced in reference 8, 9, 10, blah, 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 is the symmetry in which you interchange fermions and bosons. We will use here the notation of this reference. From that point on, you just quote the reference that you are using because there are the tools that you use. However, in the bibliography, there are six, seven entries that are original papers. Okay? These are books. Maybe apart from the book that you have used, there are other books that are the same, and maybe you can cover also them. So this is the place. In a paper, you will not put this, but in a thesis, it gives the information to the reader that goes to the end and look at the bibliography, then the bibliography is complete. Imagine that I have a thesis, I am in the jury, and I have to review a thesis on Palladini gravitation, on thermodynamics of a closed system, and on quantum computing. And I work on high energy physics. I'm not an expert in each of them. And it happens that the one on quantum computing is very well written. And I decided that I want to go a bit deeper inside this. I go to the bibliography and I go to the text cited there. So if the bibliography is complete, the reader that gets interested in this particular field could access to this information. So that's why you have to try to put the most information as possible within these 2 to 4 pages link. If you have to quote someone, we have already talked about plagiarism before. You put between quotes and then you will put a line. Okay? And then you will put the reference here. This is the same as if you are writing come empezaba. Nel mezzo del cammin di nostra vita mi ritrovai per una sera oscura. But the starting of the Divine Comedy, you put between quotes, well, the same if Einstein wrote a sentence that you want to quote, is for you the same as Dante or Cervantes. Okay, this is a bit of literature that you can quote. And how do you quote? Well, in LaTeX there are three way of writing the citation. LaTeX EU, LaTeX US, and BibTeX. I suggest you to use BibTeX. Have you already used? How many people are using BibTeX? Everybody? Oh, everybody. Someone has used the LaTeX EU? Better. Okay. LaTeX EU unfortunately is used a lot in things like the informe to the ministerio or whatever, because they want things written in a particular way that is not BibTeX-like. But for us, better to use BibTeX. So, first you go to Inspire, you book for a paper, and you take the BibTeX and you put it into a file. I'm telling this for people that have not used BibTeX. This is what you get. Imagine that you were looking for this paper by Tofta, and this is the entry that you will get, and you will put in a file name in a file called whatever. And then at the end of the story, you put bibliography with the name of the file and compile. And you get this. Oh, this is not the only way it can come out. You can tune this. Depending on the particular style that you are using for the bibliography, out of this information, it will take those that are inserted in the style. I think this was J-Hack. So I have a style file that I compile together with the rest, in which it tells which kind of information I will take from here. As I told you have to take control of your output, so you decide if you want to use a style or whatever. For example, in many theses, you will find the title. In a paper, This is solo. In a paper, usually you never put titles because it takes you a lot of speed. But in the thesis, this could well be Toften-Weltmann regularization and normalization of Gauge fields and nuclear fields. You never put the editorial or the DOE. Okay. Still, there are styles in which they give you the DOE, and then you can click and go directly to the journal. This depends on the style you are using, and you can choose. Fine. The class of today, as I told you, since it's technical, for me it's easier, and I go faster. I hope that then you will have some questions, but in any case, I'm going now to the last part, that is my interaction with the AI looking for bibliography. So I put a particularly nice example, in which nice because it's an example of how you have to work with the AI. So I was looking for references in a paper that were covering large N expansion in mesons, in hadronic matrix elements. Okay, so this is something for Lattice QCD. We had a lengthy discussion. At some point, I asked for some references, and then here I asked the AI to make a summary of the discussion on the references because I wanted to produce for this particular class. Okay, so this is the digestion made by the AI on the discussion we had. Most of the discussion is there, but this is not the original discussion because the discussion was diluted along many days. Okay, so what the AI wrote is, of course, Andrea, this is an excellent example to show your student because it illustrates exactly how an AI can sound confident while being wrong, and how a researcher must push back, verify, and force the model to correct itself. It contains the lengthier exchange about Bura's large N references, including the moment where I invented or conflated titles. Admits your insistence on checking correction process, the final clarification. I reconstruct the dialogue faithfully based on our earlier interaction style, preserving pedagogical value. The students see how to interrogate an AI, not just the final answer. I included guided links on key concept. I don't remember if I had here included the guided links. Now, as I told you, like in the case of Big Tech that everybody of you are working with, I'm repeating myself because there are years in which not everybody used Big Tech or nobody had written anything, so it was useful to show how to reply. On the AI, I'm sure that everybody of you are using AI, so probably you already fall into this. But still, if at this point no one has been looking for a reference with an AI, this is instructive. So what happens? I need the references for the Bura's paper on large N QCD. Could you give me the BibTeX entries? I wanted the BibTeX not to look in Inspire and take the BibTeX and put it there. So I wanted to be cooked, because I was lazy. Okay. So what he was giving me, okay, these are the papers. I remember we have been discussing on this a lot of time because I was preparing a paper on this. So I had 1 month of discussion on this particular subject. Now I'm writing the paper, so I need a bibliography. I never read the paper because I already know what is going on. But I have to put the merit to those that have done this. So I need the reference, and I wanted a BibTeX entry just to copy and put it where it was. So it gave me this. But since I'm expert, I was looking for this particular paper in Inspire. Okay, these titles don't look right. I can't find them on Inspire. Are you sure they exist? Yes, they should be correct. They are widely cited in large N literature. Still, if you don't find something in Inspire, I mean, you have to be a bit worried about the existence or not. What you're looking inspire? Well, you put in the search the name of the author and some keywords of the title. Okay? Come out a lot of things. Maybe you can also put the year so you restrict things. And you discover that year there is no paper with that name, but you still can think that the paper is not 98 because it was submitted in 97. Published in 98, and the AI is giving you the reference on the year of publication and not the year of submission, and Inspire is giving you the opposite. So you can also go not to Inspire, but just write down the title, the full complete title on Google and look for it at the end. Either you find it or not. I check Inspire again. There is no Buras paper with those titles. Are you inventing them? You are right to question this. Let me check more carefully. It seems the titles I gave you do not correspond to actual publication. What is doing? It's creating titles, putting together words that sound reasonable from papers of those guys. Those guys has been working on this subject a lot, so a reasonable title for a paper would be perfectly Lanzheim QCT and the Delta One half rule, but the paper doesn't exist. Please give me the real references. I know Buras wrote about Lanzheim, but not with those titles. Thank you for insisting. Correct references are this one. You see, Lanzheim approach to count the case, the anatomy epsilon prime over epsilon. Actually, this is on this subject, the Delta I one half rule, but with a title that is completely different. So probably in this case, this was made up from the abstract or whatever. Okay, so the outcome you can see is more precise because here there was just Buras 98. It was not 98, it was 92. The other one was 2015 and not 2000. But now it starts to be more precise. So these are reasonable entries. If you go to Inspire, you will find them. But this is a summary. It took a lot of time. In particular, on this particular subject, I don't know why it took a lot of time in order to go to the real references. For others, I mean, now the AI knows me better, so trying to give me already reasonable things. But this was at the beginning, let's say, and it was sure that I can invent, and that's it. So, you have to take control also of the AI. Fine. There was another point. I'm sorry. Still not correct. The 1992 paper is not a Lanzheim paper, and the 2015 is not by Buras. Okay, so now the error was in the authors. You are right. Let me verify. The correct are Buras and Gerard, and the title has changed again. Okay. I forgot that there was a third point. So you see that the iteration had to go through many, many trials. So don't believe what the AI produces as the bibliography. Go and check in Inspire one by one before asking for the BibTeX entry. The BibTeX entry that you have to put is the real one you have finally localized the entry. And I suggest to take the entry from Inspire and not ask to the AI to produce the BibTeX entry, because otherwise you have no control. Fine. If at the very beginning I would have taken the invented BibTeX entry that this would have produced with the DOI invented or whatever, and I put in my file, then it goes to the bibliography and that's it. So I'm lost. So I now know that I have to ask for the titles, look in Inspire, get the BibTeX entry from Inspire. Acknowledgement. This is the last part or the first part of the thesis. So on referencing, there are questions. Are there any questions? No?
I have a question.
Fine, go on.
I don't know, but can the references, I mean, can the referees of the thesis or the Yeah, the thesis. Ask about any of the references.
The
The
reader of the thesis.
presentation, I mean.
If the person in the jury ask, you have not quoted this.
No, I mean, for example, a question as, I don't know, someone says in this paper you have quoted.
Yes, this can happen. If the person that read the thesis knows the reference, can say that you are wrong, or can say that there is something you are missing, or that you are quoting the wrong stuff. This can happen.
Okay.
In the thesis, you have to put a lot of references. Okay, so everything that you are using, and also, as I told you, the original papers that you have not read, maybe, but they're well before what you read. In the presentation, on the other hand, we will see on next Thursday, the number of references that you put, that you still have to put some referencing, has to be very, very small. So I will tell you how you quote, which kind of things has to be quoted during the discussion, the defense. They are a subset of what you have to put in the bibliography of the thesis itself. Most of the people that do questions usually only focus on those. It's very difficult that someone tells you in a bibliography that is 2 to 4 pages long, so with the size that is understood to be reasonable for a thesis. It's difficult that someone tells you, I see that in your bibliography is missing this fundamental paper. In a paper, it could be that if you discuss in a talk, you wrote a paper, and then you give a talk on the subject. And it happens that in the audience, there is one of the guys that you are quoting. It can happen that those guys say, you didn't put my paper on this in this particular point in which I discovered this much way much before than you and much better. And then a quarrel can start. This can happen. In the defense of the thesis, I would not say that the jury will go in a bibliography that is not too short. If you have 3 pages in the bibliography and that's it, I'm sure that one of the jury will say, I think that the bibliography is too small. But if the bibliography is more or less okay, nobody will ask you for you forgot to quote this or you didn't read this. You can certainly put papers that you have not read because you know that you have to put them, but you read a digested version 20 years after, things like that. And you can say, I've not read the original paper by Einstein, but still I have to put it because I'm talking about general relativity.
Okay.
Okay. Other questions from abroad, from the Zoom? No? Fine. So the last point was the acknowledgement. The acknowledgement in a paper and in the thesis are completely different. In the paper, the most important part of the acknowledgement is the funding. Okay? Most of the funding agency will ask you to be explicitly mentioned in the paper. And if you don't mention them, the corresponding institute will not get the benefit from the publication. So if I'm a TIFIC and I've been paid by a grant of the Generalitat. I have to put in the acknowledgement that I thanks the grant number this of the Generalitat through which the IFIC hosted me to come here and so on and so forth. Then both IFIC and the Generalitat can put this in their own summaries and saying, 2,432 papers have been published in which I am quoted in the reference, in the acknowledgement. Okay? Then they go to the ministry and say 200 for 2,000 for other paper. Okay. So for the acknowledgement in a paper, basically the only important part is this one. To acknowledge someone, nice. So if you have discussed something with someone else and you put in the acknowledgement, this is nice. Still, remember that the part that you have to be perfectly correct is the funding. Fine. On the other hand, in the thesis, this usually go to the beginning, and the acknowledgement is a different part of the text. Now, I think it doesn't count on the 50 pages limited, but I'm not sure. If it counts, keep it at most one page. And this is the typical place in which you acknowledge your parents, your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, your cat, your advisor sometimes, not always, it's not compulsory, it's not mandatory. Whatever, they can be in any possible form. So they go to the beginning and they have completely different meaning. These are real acknowledgement to things that have nothing to do usually with the thesis itself, but with the environment. In the paper, they should contain the people with which you have been discussing something in a introductory phase, or you go to a conference, you discuss with someone, you get an idea, and then you acknowledge a useful discussion with. There are levels of acknowledgement. Useful discussion is that you have been in the blackboard with someone. Discussion is that you have a discussion that was not useful. Okay, so you have to face them, and there are words to face them. Apart of that, well, again, they say that you don't. The class of today, I have nothing more specific. As I told you, there should be a section on the tables. I cannot invent anything on the tables because it's better to have examples. So, I think up to today I only received one introduction or thesis for the AI discussion of tomorrow. So, please submit your work by tomorrow, as I told you. Some prepare made up text in which you only write the prompt. I think that if you add the prompt, is better because then we would discuss both the output and the prompt. Okay? Oh, for Wednesday, I would like you to ask examples of what we have been discussing today. So, a short LaTeX file in which you put one figure with a caption, one equation, one table if you want, and a couple of references. Okay? Then usually I take the examples, I try to be anonymous, I put the examples on the screen and we discuss if we see something that is wrong. So don't worry if the figure that you have is a mess. This is precisely actually more useful to discuss, say, look, this figure is a mess because of this. I would improve on this side. The aesthetic, the content, the labeling is whatever. So, what you have, I really want that you show me that you know how to insert a figure, how to insert an equation, how to plot the equation, I go to the reference. Okay? This is by Wednesday. So, send it today. You have to send me the AI work, and tomorrow you may send the one on the technicalities. There was one last thing that I want to comment. I forgot also another example that I had of a thesis in which I was in the jury a couple of years ago. And this is a reminder I should write down. As I told you, you put in the appendix lengthy part on the questions, the notation, things like this. But If you have code, put the code in the appendix. Never ever put the code in the main text. I found people in which half of the text is the code. Now, we are physicists, not informatics, so for us, the code is a way to get to something. I'm not writing the code by itself. I want to write the code because I want to do something. Okay, so I put in the text the something that is produced by the code. Imagine you are solving numerically some equations. When you put the figures on the result, you don't put the code. And in particular, but maybe the code itself could go to a good appendix, one page of coding in which you have written a Python software that do something, okay? And you put it in appendix. This is coding with the software of coding like Python or C++ or whatever. Now, even worse than this is to put in the main text the Mathematica. Okay, I had a thesis in which half of the text were parts of a snapshot of Mathematica. Okay, Mathematica is even more a way to get to something. I don't want to read lines of Mathematica. I want to read the output of Mathematica. And aesthetically, it's awful. I mean, a software of C++ maybe is not the nicest thing to read when you go to bed before sleeping. But at least are lines of characters that can be written in some way. A snapshot of Mathematica is the worst thing that you can imagine in a written page. You will never want to read it. So if you have Mathematica and you want to put Mathematica somewhere, you put it in appendix. If you have code, you put it in appendix. Everything that is not text, some equation, the figure does not go into the main text. Fine? Okay, last questions, if any? No? Yes?
Since you mentioned about code, usually, I mean, if you are doing the masterpieces or the PhD thesis, the code will be too large to be included. How to properly cite it? I mean, you could
Yes.
include it, like some part of it, in the appendix.
If there is some subset of the code that is particularly meaningful for you because it was a clever solution to a technical problem, you can say we wrote this routine, for example, a routine or an object, depending on the kind of language you use, could be something that goes to an appendix. Otherwise, you can create a repository where you put the code and you put somewhere the link saying if you want to accept the code, and you put the link in the thesis. Okay? In the presentation, it's even better because at some point you have an active link and actually you could go during the discussion. If the code was an important part of your work, I think it deserves to be highlighted. Okay, but you cannot discuss the code in the text because the text has a different meaning. The purpose of the text is something that you can talk about on a coffee. I mean, not really, but in principle is standard language and the code is not. But I would certainly put a link to the code. If the code is lengthy and is a big part of the work, you will see it. What happens, you are doing physics, so probably code is open source. This could not be done if you are belonging to a company. So I don't know what you should do in that case. If you belong to a company and you are paid to stay here to do something, the code that you wrote is not does not belong to you, belong to the company. It's not your case, I hope.
It's still in a collaboration, so still it's
Well, in the collaboration itself, they have some rules. Still, what you have written usually is up to you. Unfortunately, in a collaboration, probably what you have written is a small part of a big Monte Carlo that is property of the collaboration. So you have to take the specific rules to put it to the public. Probably the routine that you have written, I mean, if it's a small part of a big software, you can put in the appendix the object of the routine, probably. Someone else has something else? Okay, so let's see you tomorrow. I don't remember at which hour. I think half past nine. Yeah, because there is a seminar here. Okay, I will try to upload both the video recording and the slides. And I need input from you for tomorrow because otherwise we have nothing to discuss when I have to use those of last year. But last year we were in the infancy of trying to do this. I'm sure that in a couple of years we'll have much more digested understanding of the AI. Well, actually, probably there will be a robot doing the same. I will be home. Okay, bye. Thank you. Those of you that have not signed, please come here.
Is there a pen in the
I will leave the pen there.